The Widowmaker. Chapter 1. The cut end of the Douglas fir, wide as a truck tire, wept pitch in the damp air. Dale ran his thumb over the grain. Cold seeped through the leather of his glove. Valley fog, thick and tasting of wet asphalt, pressed down on the yard, muffling the sound of the highway a mile west. It clung to the stacks of raw timber and softened the edges of the machinery, leaving a slick of condensation on painted steel. The world was his gravel lot and the first 50 feet of trees that bordered it. "Is this the one from the north slope?" she asked. Mrs. Gable stood beside him, her arms crossed tight against the chill. She had owned the land for 30 years, her husband for 30 years before that. Her trust was a hard, dense thing, like old-growth heartwood. "Yes," Dale said. "The rest of the load is from the south acreage. You can see the difference." He pointed with a gloved finger. "Tighter rings on this one. Slower growth. It'll make for better framing lumber." His hand rested on the rough bark. He could feel the immense, stalled weight of the log through his palm. It had been a living thing yesterday. Today it was inventory. He had overseen the felling himself, walked the woods with her son, marking the trees that were ready, and leaving the ones that would stand for another decade. A thinning, not a clear cut. That was his name in the county. Dale Haywood gets the most out of a parcel without ruining it. "My husband always said the North Slope trees were stubborn," she said. Her breath plumed white. "Took their time." "They did." Dale straightened up, his knees cracking in the cold. He looked from the log to her face. Small lines radiated from the corners of her eyes, a map of approvals and disapprovals drawn by decades of looking at timber and men. He waited. "The check is for the full amount," she said, pulling a white bank envelope from her coat pocket. "For the logs, and for your cruise time, and for the hauler. I'll settle with him when he gets here." Dale stripped off his right glove, tucking it into his back pocket. The cold bit at his knuckles, the skin there thick with scar tissue. He took the envelope. He did not count the bills in front of her. He folded the envelope once and slid it into the front pocket of his jeans. From his back pocket, he pulled his wallet. It was a brown leather bifold, the cowhide worn to a deep, pliant softness. One edge, where the factory stitching had failed years ago, was sewn together with a careful running stitch of fishing line that had darkened over the years to the color of old moss. The repair was tight, the knots small and even. He opened it with a familiar motion, the fold giving without resistance. Inside were his driver's license, a few business cards for the mill in Oak Ridge, and a slim fold of cash. He thumbed out 3 20s and a 10. The bills worn and soft as cloth. "This is for your son," Dale said, holding the money out. "For helping with the skidder yesterday." Mrs. Gable looked at the bills, then at his face. Her expression did not change. That was part of the job. He worked a full day. He gets paid for a full day. Dale kept his hand steady. This was part of it too, the way things were done. Clean. Every man paid for his labor. No favors taken. None expected. She took the money after a moment, her dry fingers brushing his. "I'll see he gets it." She tucked the cash into her pocket. "You'll call me when the mill sends their tally, the minute it comes across the fax." She nodded once, a gesture of completion, and walked toward the old Buick, parked near the office trailer. The engine turned over on the second try, a gout of blue-white smoke joining the fog. Her headlights cut 2 weak cones in the grayness. He watched the taillights disappear through the open gate and onto the county road before he turned back to the wood. The air was changing. A breeze stirred from the east, carrying the scent of fir needles and wet earth. The fog began to thin, dissolving into ragged streamers that snagged in the tops of the surrounding trees. The clean line of the Cascade foothills appeared to the south, a dark green wall against a lightening sky. The rumble of a diesel engine grew closer. Pete Alderman's truck, a Chevy older than Dale's Ford, rattled through the gate, its headlights off. Pete had worked for him for 12 years. He parked next to the equipment shed, the driver's side door groaning open. He was a barrel-chested man in a red flannel shirt and a dusty Filson vest, a gray beard covering the lower half of his face. He carried a black steel lunchbox and a thermos. "Morning," Pete said. His voice was gravel. "Pete." Dale gestured with his chin toward the new logs. Gable's north slope. Pete set his lunchbox on the edge of the loader's big bucket and walked over. He ran a hand over the same cut end Dale had inspected. He grunted, a sound of professional appraisal. "Good wood. It'll do." Two more trucks pulled in, the rest of the crew. Doors slammed, the low murmur of men's voices, the metallic clank of a chain being tossed into a truck bed cut through the air. Dale pulled his glove back on. He walked to his F-250, the dark green paint beaded with moisture. He opened the driver's door and reached in for the clipboard on the dash. The cab smelled of sawdust. He carried the board over to the equipment shed, where the men were gathered. The cut list was straightforward. The gable logs needed to be loaded and strapped, ready for the hauler. Then they would start splitting the BLM cedar from the week before. Shakes and fence posts, 2 days of work, maybe three. He handed the clipboard to Pete. "You and Jimmy take the loader, get the fur sorted. Mark anything with heart rot for the firewood pile. Carl, you and the kid can get the splitter warmed up." The men nodded. There was no wasted motion. They moved to their tasks, the practiced economy of a crew that had done the same work in the same order 1,000 times. The loader's engine coughed to life, a deep hydraulic whine rising as Pete tested the bucket. The sound settled into a steady, powerful hum. Dale stood by his truck, watching the yard take shape. The fog was almost gone, leaving behind a sky the color of washed-out denim. The loader's yellow arm rose, its grapple closing around the first of the big firs. The ground vibrated slightly with the strain. This was the foundation, the solid, measurable weight of the work, the clear accounting of logs and dollars, of hours worked and wages paid. The whine of the band saw cut off. The loader's diesel growl dropped to an idle. Only the rhythmic clatter of the conveyor chain moving cull logs toward the chipper continued, a mechanical heartbeat in a suddenly stilled yard. Dale did not turn his head. He watched the source of the change in the side mirror of his Ford, the convex glass shrinking the world to a warped oval. A dark blue sedan rolled through the open gate, a Ford LTD, government fleet model. The tires crunched gravel with a sound too fine, too deliberate for this place. It stopped 20 yards away, its engine a low hum that failed to blend with the machinery. The dust it raised was minimal, settling quickly back onto the hardpack. A car that spent its life on pavement. The driver's door opened. A man stepped out, leaving the door ajar. He was tall, lean inside a navy windbreaker that hung loose on his frame. His hair was a gray bristle, a military cut grown out by a week. He put on a pair of thin-framed glasses, and his gaze swept the yard once, methodical, an inventory. His eyes found Dale and stopped. He started walking. Another man remained in the passenger seat, a shape behind the tinted glass. Heat, up in the cab of the loader, killed the engine. The conveyor chain shuddered to a halt. The only sound left was the ticking of hot metal from Dale's truck and the man's leather shoes on the gravel. The man came to a stop 5 feet from Dale. He had the dry, sun-etched skin of someone who worked outdoors but not with his hands. His posture was straight, his shoulders set. He did not extend a hand. "Dale Haywood?" The voice was level, without regional character. Dale gave a short nod. His own hands hung loose at his sides. He could feel the grain of the key to his truck's toolbox under his right thumb. The man reached inside his windbreaker. He brought out a leather billfold, flipping it open to a badge and an identification card. The photograph was a poor likeness, washed out by a flash. Harlan Webb, United States Marshals Service. He let Dale look, then folded it shut and returned it to his pocket. I have a warrant for your arrest. The words did not seem to connect to the air, to the smell of pitch and diesel. They were separate things. Webb watched Dale's face, his own expression unreadable. From the corner of his eye, Dale saw his crew. Four men, motionless, watching from the sorting deck. Pete's face a pale disc behind the loader's windshield. Webb recited the charges. Federal flight to avoid prosecution. His voice was a flat instrument, delivering information. When he finished, he produced a set of handcuffs from his belt. They were nickel-plated, linked by a short chain. They made a small, clean, metallic sound as he held them. Dale looked from the cuffs to the man's face. That's not my name.